And if the night sky should empty of the stars, and the faint glow of the moon illuminating the town otherwise in utter darkness, staring through the shadows and quiet, there's a piercing like an icicle deep in my neck. I don't have control or the will to fight back. I close my eyes and begin my new romance. I open my mouth to gasp my last breath. When a quaint small town becomes a hellhole, all I need is an invitation to steal your soul. Good evening, and welcome to Gore, a horror podcast to keep you up at night. I'm the Wicked Kitten, always getting into mischief, and with me, as always, are my creepy co-hosts, the lovely Travis.
Hi.
The endearing, the ethereal Faye.
Hi.
And lastly, the dread you've been feeling since you hit play on this podcast, Dreadly.
Hello.
So, did you know that this is our 52nd episode? Please don't think about that too hard, by the way. This is our 52nd episode. That means that we've been doing the show for almost officially, technically, sort of 2 years. Sort of. Can you believe that?
That's a lot.
It doesn't feel like it's been 2 years, but also feels like we've done this show forever. So, I mean.
I don't remember a time when we weren't doing the show.
We kind of shot off of another show.
That's true. It's like we were swimming, and then, you know, when we come to the other side, and then, like, we spin around and we kick our feet on the thing, whatever that's called, like, and we shot ourselves off of Wait You Haven't Seen, and then took a year before we actually did a real episode.
It was a long ramp up.
But we did finally break on through to the other side.
Yes, we found that door. The one that won't hit you back.
Sorry, not sorry.
So, let's do what we've done 51 other times. Travis, what you doing? What you watching? How you been?
Still Baldur's Gate dominating most of my free time, what little I have of it. But I'm having a ton of fun with that. I did watch a few good movies. I went last night and saw A Haunting in Venice, which was fun. I'm a sucker for murder mysteries anyway. I just love them. I've loved them since the first Sherlock Holmes story I read when I was, I don't know, like 6 or 7. And so I'm always loving those. And I really have enjoyed the Kenneth Branagh films. And this one was definitely those, but they changed things from the book. And they added in a lot of, there are horror elements to it. It's PG-13, so it doesn't go too far, but it has a lot of elements of horror films sprinkled into the murder mystery. There's a supernatural bent that runs through the whole thing. It was a lot of fun. I quite enjoyed it. So if you like those films already, I think you'll like that one, would be my quick spoiler-free review. And Branagh as Poirot is always great. He's not David Suchet, I get that, but he's good.
Yay, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Outside of that, it's been watching stuff for various shows. We're in Private Eye Month on Those Were the Days, so it's a lot of, like, Magnum P.I. was what we just got done with. We're doing Simon and Simon. We'll be doing Rockford Files. And I am also going to be on Wait You Haven't Seen, covering a movie we did way back when, Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yay!
Somebody hasn't seen it before, so I get to expose them to it.
Who is it? Who is it? Do we know
him? His name is Matt. You don't know him.
Well, I'm still excited for Matt to see it.
I am too. I can't wait. So yeah, it's been a fairly normal couple of weeks. I'm also going to be guest hosting TMS coming up in a couple of days. So it'll be fun. I'll be sure to mention the show several times.
I'm still waiting for my invitation for that. But okay.
Oh, shut up. That did get a spit take. So. Damn you. Faye, Who's watching the store? Are you minding the shop?
No, not at all. My store left a long time ago. Oh, I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 when I can, and I have been keeping up on Ahsoka. So that's pretty much the time that I've had because of work.
Work sucks.
Agreed.
Dreadly, how are you doing with the things that you are interested in and are following on the internet and stuff, like games, books?
Do we think that new listeners, if this is their first episode, think that you're having a stroke at any point during these
interviews? I hope
like,
so.
I just have to wonder, what's the percentage of that?
My personal favorite thing now is to post the link to Spotify to the episode because it plays a random part of the show, which is really fun sometimes because I'm like, what do people think of this? They're like, what? Like, I almost went into my... it cuts off right before last episode when I was like, yeah, so I make a deal with them to kill other people. And I'm like, they got it cut off right before that. Or they'd be like, I'm not listening to the rest of this.
Or it's going to draw them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want those listeners.
Sorry, I just had to ask that question. Please continue.
Things are going well. I have also played some Baldur's Gate 3, and I have actually finished it. And without spoiling anything, I'm just going to say that is one great game. Definitely game of the year. And damn.
Oh, I easily believe that it's going to get a lot of awards.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The thing is I hope the gaming industry sees how it was done and follows it instead of others.
One would hope so, but I doubt most will change their way of working, unfortunately. But yeah. So that game ends as good as it is. So that's...
Yay!
Sweet.
Something to look forward to in 7 years when we finish playing our game.
Aha! So while I finished Baldur's Gate 3, I had to start another game on stream. And I have chosen to start Final Fantasy 15. Another small
road
game.
Trip.
Yep. Surprisingly loving that game actually so far. So
yeah, if you look at it as just bros doing a road trip, it's a great game.
Yeah. I'm just loving the whole driving around. It looks great. Like the sceneries are nice. And you get all the soundtracks of all the other Final Fantasies. So I'm just like, I'm loving that music. So it's like, yeah, just chill. I have noticed, however, I have played like 10 hours, I think. There's a lot to do.
Oh, yeah.
Help. Help.
Nah, you have fun. I completed my game a long, long time ago of that.
Oh, yeah. And if I don't have enough time for Final Fantasy 15, I am also playing Persona 4.
Oop.
Help. I have issues.
Which version?
The golden thingy.
Okay.
That's on Steam. Yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah. But time. Help. Help.
It will be gone, especially playing those two games.
Oh, yeah. And you can tank all that because, let's be honest, I want to say Star Citizen. That's not it. Starfield. That was not good. That did not do anything for me. So I got put on back burner.
Thankfully, otherwise all of you video game people would be dead at this point.
Oh, yeah. I also somehow managed to watch some movies. So I finally watched Meg. Yeah, it's like I don't work. Shut up. Cut this out, Monica. Let's make two, which
you watched it alone
or fun? No, you were there.
Yeah,
Jesus,
we watched
Christ.
Meg too. God, you never included me there.
That one is just so much fun, and I can't wait for Meg 3. Let's be honest.
Yeah, why would we lie about Meg?
Shut up, Meg.
I'm just saying. Look, shark movie for him. Jason Statham for me.
Yeah, I like Jason Statham.
Like, there's, and it's Jason Statham in. It's the Jason Statham in the. There's no way on the fucking earth he ever could do any of this shit. You are the luckiest man alive. You just swam in and out of a shark's mouth, kind of things. But also, it's just a fun movie, so it makes it less like, oh, I can't believe it, and more like, yep, this movie's bananas. Also, it had tentacles. Surprise! Spoilers.
Yes, that's why I loved it even more.
Not the shark. The shark didn't have tentacles. I meant the movie.
No, that's a different movie. That's Sharktopus.
Oh God.
Different.
Yes.
Another movie I or we watched, because we're doing Stephen King stuff, apparently. We've watched Sometimes They Come Back.
This came from a conversation that we had about Tommyknockers. Because we decided Tommyknockers was so bad, let's watch Sometimes They Come Back. Which isn't, you know what? It's not my,
hey.
It's, man, it feels like 90s ass Stephen King movie. You know what
well,
I'm saying?
Yes, it is.
I know, but it's just, it's that window into his time. It's just so.
Yes, and I love it. I still like that movie a lot.
It's not
what
bad,
about the
I'm just
15
saying.
15 sequels.
There's only two sequels.
I thought there was like five or six sequels.
No, there's Sometimes They Come Back Again, and then there's Something Always Come Back.
Sometimes They Always Come Back.
And I don't know any other ones. There might be.
When you have a title of something like Sometimes They Come Back or I Know What You Did Last Summer, and you make a sequel to it, it has to be the dumbest fucking title. Like, I still yep. know what you did last summer.
And I love
Two
it.
Summers ago. Or I'll always know what you did last summer, 15 years ago.
That is the worst movie.
Yeah, we should have
ever.
Another. I always know
ever.
What you did last summer again.
No, we did.
Movie.
We did that. We did the first one. We're fine. We don't have to do anymore. It's cool.
Look,
well, no,
the second one isn't.
I
that
want
bad.
Sequels. I mean, I want new movies.
The third one is so bad it will make you consider murdering somebody and leaving their body in the ocean.
Even I can't defend the third one now. I love this second one though. Just I'm
like,
a sucker for
not even the story, which the story is horrible. Like the camera work itself will give you a headache that will turn you into a serial killer.
It's like we could
a
make a better movie
than the movie itself had. Look. There you go. You have that one for free, people who make movies.
There you go.
Well,
looking
you
it
save
up,
it for
was,
later.
Looking it up, there was Sometimes They Come Back. Sometimes they come back again. Sometimes they come back for more. And there was a TV movie of Sometimes They Come Back.
Oh, there was a TV movie?
Was that the third one then? And then four more has the number four in it? Because if not, somebody fucked up.
Oh my God, that would have been great. Why didn't they do that? This is Sharks Resist all over again.
Listen, God, people, before you cheap, name a movie,
okay,
come to
studios.
Us. Come to us.
Yes, we're right here. We're like your personal think tank. Just give
we
us
are the brain
the,
trust.
Give us the description of the movie and we will give you a title.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm. Another movie we watched, Vampire in Brooklyn, because somehow we were in vampire territory.
That's awesome. Yes. That was definitely a fun movie.
I remember not liking that one when it came out.
Nobody liked that when it came out.
And,
I loved it.
It was decent now, but I understand
why.
Exactly.
Well, I'll explain why. Because when I was young, I grew up watching A Different World, and there was a character on that show called Dwayne Wayne, who was played by Kadeem Hardison. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he was in the movie, and he was my favorite. And then there was Eddie Murphy, even though he was being straight, you know, like he wasn't being his normal, like, you know, silly, goofy, or funny. He was a very, like, just like kind of mean, cold character. And that is a departure for him. Yeah, but
it's definitely him playing against type.
It's fun.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. What I'm saying is nobody liked it when it came out. Like, that movie bombed so hard.
Oh, no, it did. It definitely did. I'm not saying there weren't reasons but I'm just giving my reasons why I liked it. True. Why I was the one person who watched it repeatedly.
Oof. It had a $20 million. No. It had a $20 million budget. Its worldwide grosses were just under $20 million.
Look, sometimes movies just, they don't work for different reasons. I mean, it's Wes Craven directing, like, but Eddie Murphy and Charlie Murphy writing with somebody else. So, you know, we don't really know where the problem was, do we?
Sure, no, not at all. We can't possibly figure out where that problem could have been.
Yep. But I think it could have been great. So, you know.
It could have been.
Yeah. I think it could have been.
And the last movie that I have written down was a recent one called The Blackening, which was a fun movie.
Honestly. Oh, yes. I really love this movie. The premise of it is just hilarious. It is, you know, because you have the trope of the black guy always dies first, which is basically just like the black character always dies anyway. And it's an entire cast of, black actors. And it's just hilarious. I think I recommend it to everybody. Go watch it. It's funny and horror. Horror and funny.
Good. It's on my list to watch.
And another movie that I found randomly on Shudder is a movie called Ruin Me, which I had no idea what it was going in. But it's these six people. They go off to this horror camp thing where, like, they're supposed to have, like, a real experience of being in a, what do you call it? Like a, Dreadly, help me. You watch the movie with me.
It's kind of like an escape room / murder mystery. Yeah, not murder mystery. Yeah. Mystery. So they have to find clues.
They drop in the middle of the woods and you have to solve puzzles and there's like a murderer chasing you, you know. And it's, I think the premise is really great. The execution was okay. But I think it's worth a watch, you know, because it's got like, it's got a lot of like the horror tropes because there's like, you know, there's the mean guy and the slutty girl and the whole, you know, all the tropes that you would want to see. And I think the last movie that I watched, and I did not watch this with Dread, and speaking of the last movie being called Ruin Me, I watched this movie called Class of 1984 that actually ruined me. This movie was... wow. Like, talk about real life horror. I don't know if anyone's seen this, but it has some of the most brutal scenes of like assault and assault. I don't even want to talk about it, but
yeah, it's one of those, but I still prefer Class of 1999.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, but yeah, I was checking this out and because it's one of those classic movies. Imagine if Lean on Me and The Substitute got mixed together. Because he's like trying to be a good teacher, but there's all these gangs in the school and they're very, very violent and horrible.
Hmm.
I'll just
That sounds wonderful.
There's a scene in that movie that I just was just so rough, and I didn't know it was there going in, and that just friggin' ruined me. But you know, be fair warned before you go watch it, if you watch it, because it's from 1982, so it's pretty old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I also tried to watch this movie called Green Room, which who was in it? It just flew out of my head. It's got, oh, Patrick Stewart and like, I think it's Imogen Poots.
Poots?
Yeah. I think she's the one in it. I can't remember anymore. But so this movie, it started out kind of really slow and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get through it. And then because it's like this thing about a band, there's a part in the movie where they start using this feedback sound that made me want to die. And I couldn't continue watching the movie. So I stopped watching it. But if those sounds don't bother you, go watch it. But that was just, that was like torture. Why would you do that to someone?
No
idea. Like, it's Patrick Stewart. But anyway, so that's all I watched. That's all I watched. But I think it's about that time to peek around that corner and give you some of the highlights of horror news.
There's been a lot of trailers released recently. Mm-hmm. Well, and it is that Halloween season coming up, so gotta pray on that. One of the first things is the new Goosebumps series. They released a trailer that showed quite a few different stories mixed in. Some a little more repeated, but it was still kind of fun and interesting. Can't wait to check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a Goosebumps lover. Shut up.
Sure. I think we all grew up reading those.
Goosebumps is fine. I was more of a Fear Street kid.
I mean, I more often read the scary stories to tell in the dark than I did Goosebumps.
But yes!
I liked all of that stuff.
I used to have that book and now I can't find it. I'm pretty sure my mom like burned it or something.
Here I grew up on Edgar Allan Poe and,
well, yeah,
and Lovecraft and
aw. Speaking of Edgar Allan Poe,
quote the
thank
Raven.
You, Faye. Nevermore, because we also had a trailer for a new Netflix series called The Fall of the House of Usher, and that looks amazing.
Yes, it does.
Like I need it now.
I did,
and that's
not
Flanagan,
realize,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't realize it was a series at first. I thought it was going to be a movie.
It's
going to
be like Haunting of Hill House and all that. So yeah. I assume so 10 episodes like or something.
Okay.
Whatever it is, it's got Mike Flanagan attached to it. It's going to be fucking good.
Yeah, but after you watch the trailer, it's even better. It's like, yep, this is perfect. This ticks all the boxes.
Yes.
And other childhood books, they announced and showed a trailer for Gale, which is based on The Wizard of Oz. This one looks a little interesting because it takes a lot from Return to Oz, including the Wheelers. So yeah. Enjoy that.
Those are creepy as shit,
of all,
by the way.
Fucking nightmare fuel of the Wheelers. But I saw this trailer and I swear either there was a teaser trailer put out for this like a year ago, or there was another movie along these same lines somebody made. Because I was watching this, like I have seen this trailer before. I've seen parts of this trailer before. But it's very strange. It looks like it's going to dive a lot more into sort of the psychology of it and the, like, did it actually happen type stuff.
Yeah.
With Dorothy's, niece or granddaughter or whatever the hell she's supposed to be.
Something along that. Yeah, because Dorothy is now a very, very old and in a mental asylum or something or retirement home.
Yep.
Yeah, but I swear I saw a trailer for this, like, a year ago. So I don't know if I just dreamt that or what. But this, now is this on another streaming service that I've not heard of? That's all horror movies, or cause I thought I saw something about it being like Chiller. Is that one?
Yeah. No idea what that is.
It's another streaming service, right?
Mm. It used to be another channel, but it was... It was a cable channel, but it...
It's defunct.
It wasn't on every cable company.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was on DirecTV back in the when it was on. I remember loving and watching it, but
I remember it there.
They used to play all of the Nightmare
Freddy's Nightmare?
Yeah. Exactly. Freddy's Nightmares, that's where I used to watch it, and I miss that channel like you would not believe, which is funny considering now we've got all this streaming, but yeah, there are a lot of different, there are a few different streaming services now, and they're trying to, you know, make their name by having things, like exclusively on them.
Well, it's just turning into cable channels again, is all it's doing. Which I don't love from a consumer standpoint. I don't love it because it just means you've got another thing you got to pay for.
Yeah. It's all pretty weird, but then everything's just going to end up buying everything else. And eventually it'll all be one thing again. and we'll be back where we started. It's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. So, I'm very excited to bring up John Carpenter's Suburban Screams. Ooh.
Is that a game?
No, it is a 6-episode unscripted horror anthology series, which will premiere on Friday, October 13th. On Peacock, which now that means I have to resubscribe to Peacock because I canceled it because I didn't have any money. But it's going to be great. It's got Carpenter's music. He's directing an episode. What do we all think? Travis, I feel like you might have some stuff to say.
I like the fact that they managed to get him off the couch and away from the video games and the weed to do something. So because I saw that, I was like, ooh, all right, cool. No, I watching the trailer, I didn't know I had not heard word one about what this was at all. Meaning. So then I watched the trailer and I had no idea what I was getting into. And I like the idea. I like the concept behind it. So I'm very curious. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Damn you, Peacock, for sucking me back in. Anybody else? Going once? Okay.
So there is going to be a Pet Sematary prequel. Pet Sematary Bloodlines, which will have David Duchovny in it and be set before the events of Pet Sematary. Looks interesting. I saw a tweet from Stephen King saying he thinks it's going to be pretty cool.
He tweets that about everything.
No, I mean, he yes, doesn't.
But he's not one to hold back when he doesn't like something either.
Yeah.
But
he likes a lot, but he doesn't like
He likes everything. A lot of things. I'm not going to fall all over myself and say like, I can't wait for this, but I'm curious. I didn't hate the new version of Pet Sematary. It
had a twist, but
it did. It was good, not great. I felt like, part of it was hurt by the fact that it came out after the first of the two It films, which really nailed it. And so Pet Sematary just didn't quite hold up to that standard, but I enjoyed it either way. It was fine. So I'm curious to see how this turns out. I like David Duchovny a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that he's kind of underrated in his work outside of being Fox Mulder. Yeah. It's just that so many people can only associate him with that character.
Like me.
So it's tough. Because he's actually a pretty decent actor. So I'm just curious to see how that one turns out.
Just wait till you find out he's actually Fox Mulder undercover investigating a Pet Sematary. Like,
there's a twist I could get behind.
I think he's cool. I never watched that show. X-Files. I forgot the name of it. I've never watched X-Files. Sorry.
I watched it live.
It just had a 30th anniversary.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go back and watch it. Jesus. I'm just saying, like, you know, I appreciate him. But I'm appreciative of the fact that it's a prequel, because I feel like that can show me stuff that I haven't seen before. And I love period movies.
That's part of what I like about it is, let's explore where the Pet Sematary came from. I'm curious. There's also Eli Roth's Thanksgiving is coming, and I watched a trailer for that, and it's fine. I don't love Eli Roth movies. I don't think he's that great. It looks like an Eli Roth movie, so you know it exists. It's not as bad as another trailer that or announcement I saw, which, to quote one Tommy Lee Jones, I cannot sanction this buffoonery. Mary Had a Little Lamb, because, you know, we had our stupid Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. So people are going to jump on that bandwagon and make anything they can. And now we're going to have a horror version of Mary Had a Little Lamb. Mm-hmm. Why? Just no.
Can't wait to cover it on this show.
I would just like to make a point. Now, I realize that most of these movies are much like Dreadly's favorite shark movies. But like, I feel like at some point we had some sort of hope for the horror in nursery rhymes. Because like, there's examples of like the Company of Wolves and stuff is basically just like Red Riding Hood. Like that's, and mind you, I haven't seen it before, but that looks pretty good, and like they were going in a direction that was just like, you know.
But there's a difference between adapting fairy tales, which were by their nature pseudo horror to kind of keep kids in line, and fucking nursery rhymes and shit that was never designed to have any sort of horror elements to it at all. Like,
well, why did she have the lamb? What was up with the lamb? You know, we don't know, but like, there's a right way to eat a Snickers, or is it Reese's?
And speaking of nursery rhymes, what about London Bridge is the butt falling down?
Yeah, let's have that where it's a great old one pulling the bridge down at the end.
That's wait, isn't that already a movie Gerard Butler?
But it's like, the fairy tale adaptations where they're going back and kind of rediscovering and readapting fairy tales from their original form. I get those and I like those quite a bit, but there's something about taking like the story of Winnie the Pooh does not need to be made into a horror film, a shitty micro budget slasher film. And please stop.
They won't.
I know, but I can still ask.
And he asked nicely. Okay. So remember that, people who make movies, we've spoken to you twice this episode. Them. What?
Please keep making them.
He's Belgian. Don't listen to him.
There's an angel on one of your shoulders and a devil on the other whispering to you. I can't tell you which one of these is which, but they're there. They're there.
And now for tonight's feature presentation. So, while we're out of town, you two are in charge of taking care of the house.
You can count on us.
Can you go over the instructions for locking up one more time?
Well, you go get the keys for the locks down in the basement.
Why the basement?
Because that's where they are.
Yes. Anyway, starting in the basement, first lock the door to the house using the key with the bat symbol. Then go up the spiral staircase leading outside and lock the bulkhead door using the pentagram key. Then head back to the front by walking around the house counterclockwise while chanting the mysterious words, "Pernicious Anemia!" And lock the front door by using the final key.
And what symbol is on that key?
It just says front door.
Got it.
Sounds easy enough.
Oh, also don't forget, there's a package arriving tomorrow night. Just put it straight into the basement, and whatever you do, don't open it.
Hold on a second. That sounds complicated. Let me write this down.
Salem's Lot is a 1979 two-part horror miniseries based on the 1975 horror novel Salem's Lot by Stephen King. I guess technically Jerusalem's Lot, but let's not quibble about this. Directed by Toby Hooper and starring David Soul, Bonnie Bedelia, and James Mason. Honorable mention to Fred Willard because I fucking love him. Thank you. It is the second of King's novels to be published and the second to be adapted. Right before his eventual boom in the 1980s that we all know him from. It's another iconic movie in a row that's well-liked. And it's hopefully it makes up a little bit more for Shark Month. But how do you feel about this movie, Travis?
I mean, it's not bad. Like, as Stephen King adaptations go, you can go from the renaissance we've had over the last few years of like just fantastic ones. Some of them are a little bit middling. I would put this in the upper half of Stephen King adaptations, especially the miniseries adaptations. Is it perfect? No, I have quibbles with it. I didn't think Hutch was a great choice for the lead. David Soul, I didn't dislike him, but I kept watching it thinking like, you know, we could have somebody better than him. But it's fine. I had no problems with it at all. It's good.
Faye, how do you feel about this movie?
It's a movie.
Uh-oh.
It's a TV miniseries.
This is true.
Technically. It's a miniseries. Should we start saying that?
It's a TV miniseries. No. It was all right. I mean, it put me to sleep. But the way that it was shot, the way it was made, it's going to. It's not a very action-y film. It wasn't designed to be. I don't think the book was that much either. It's been a long time since I've read the book and even watched the miniseries because I remember seeing it as a kid. But
it's definitely slow burn, yeah.
It's a very slow burn.
This would have been better suited to be a single hour and a half to 2 hour movie rather than two part miniseries. Cause I love a slow burn. I have no problem with that. Oh. This one was too slow. Like the fuse went out twice in the first half. Cause the first half drags a lot.
Well, have I got news for you? There is another adaptation in the 2004. I want to say
2004. Yeah.
It's not better, but still.
Dreadly, how do you feel about this movie? Miniseries. Whoops.
Aha! Thing. This thing we watched. I think it's a decent adaptation. It's definitely slow burn, but it's also, you know, it was the 70s. So things were different back then. Well, one thing I noticed while rewatching this, because I've seen this ages ago, but it's been a while. One thing I noticed this time was that it's actually pretty well shot. Everything looks good, like for a TV movie or miniseries, whatever.
Yeah. That's the cat.
This looks good. And the acting overall was pretty decent. Like, you wouldn't think you were watching a TV made for TV thing. Eventually you will, because of you don't see any gore or nudity or whatever, because they couldn't. But yeah.
I think that would be my thing is, I agree with you that it's shot very well, but it does have the look and feel of a TV movie and the budget of a TV movie. So again, I agree with you though. It's good. Just not as good as it could have been.
Yeah. But one thing that is still iconic for me, because this is something I remember very well, is the shot of the vampire. The whole him lying there and like and the little teeth. Like
little.
That is something they nailed.
Yeah.
That was.
Huh.
That was good. But yeah, overall enjoyed it.
Yeah. This was my first time watching this. I had heard about it a bunch, and I've seen so many scenes from it where I was just like, well, that vampire just looks like Nosferatu.
Nosferatu.
They're just stealing. Whatever. Like, he told you how to pronounce his name. but, you know, it was very slow. Oh, God, like these past two movies, I swear, it was very slow. But this one had the added bonus of being way longer and slow. And
right, so, because that's the thing, right? We talked about that last week last episode with The Exorcist and how it was a slow burn, but this adds like an hour to that.
Yeah.
And exactly. Repeats scenes too.
I mean, because we watched this in one go. I assume this was broadcast.
No. But the repeat scene I'm talking about was all in the first half, because when little brother shows up to big brother at the house, in the window, scratching at the window, floating, you know, doing the whole thing, we get that scene and it ends with him baring his teeth. And then we cut away and we do a scene and then we cut to the hospital and the exact same thing happens, but he's in the hospital room and it ends with him biting him in the neck. Like, we didn't need that scene twice.
But it looked cool though.
It looked okay.
Look, they were proud about their fog machine thing.
Right, scene. Right there. That's one of the iconic scenes of the movie. And I think I realize why is because it happened 16 times in the movie. And so people just remember it a lot. It fuses in your brain when you see it that many times. That's what I think. It did look cute, but you know, and it's been redone in other movies.
Sure. And it looks good. I just, even having it happen like a second time, either in part two or later, is good. But we had literally one scene in between the two of them. And it was just a scene of two people sitting at a table talking for like 3 minutes. And then we go back and do the same thing over again. Like,
I think they were trying to set that up as this is how they're turning people into vampires.
But it was the same exact thing twice. We didn't if you're going to do that, you do it with different characters. You don't do the same. He turned the same person into a vampire and then turned him into a vampire.
I think they were trying to show that the first bite doesn't turn them.
I didn't get any of that at all. Didn't
I don't give a shit about your rules. Can I say that? So I think my real thing, it's not that I didn't enjoy this movie. Like I said, it's slow burn, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's the 70s. I can forgive a little bit of slow. But I think that this is one of those that it's a lot. It's very long. And I feel like I need to watch it again to really grasp a lot of the stuff, because I felt a little lost at times because it was so long. And
you go watch it again. We'll wait.
It's just one of those things where I'll watch it again. I might have a different feel for it. I'm not going to say it was bad. I don't think I'll ever say it's bad, but I need to watch it again. It's a lot of meat. It's a lot of meat.
I think too, there's slow burn and then there's glacial pacing, which this had glacial pacing to it. On top of the thing with The Exorcist, dread aside, because he said he didn't care about the character, but the first half of The Exorcist is to set you up to actually care about who Reagan is, who her mom is, and who Father Karras is, and make you care about them so that when things do go nuts in the last half hour, third act, you care. And my problem here, again, good, I like Salem's Lot, but I don't care all that much about Ben Mears, because we don't get a lot of, he's an author and that's basically all we know about him, and he grew up here, but like most of the people that are there don't know him. Like the one teacher does, And that's it. Nobody else seems to realize like he grew up there. The constable, you know, none of that. And I didn't buy the romance and angle at all because I didn't feel like David Soul and Bonnie Bedelia had any chemistry together. And there was nothing setting them up. So that was kind of my big problem. Is I can deal with a slow burn if it's giving me character development and it's giving me things to care about when the stuff starts to ramp up. And this didn't do it as well as it could have. I did spend a lot of time being like, I like this character, but man, would a different actor have been fun to see here? Like Burgess Meredith as the old teacher guy, I thought would have been kind of cool. Or the one kid's dad reminded me of like a young Corbin Burnson a little bit. Oh. Right? And so,
yeah,
like I kept thinking about that, but then there were other things like, and they had the subplot of, I love Fred Willard. Fred Willard's awesome. He's so great. And, am I the only one that every time they would talk about Crockett would say "and Tubbs" right after it? Or is that just me? Because I saw like Crockett Realty and I'm like, it should be Crockett and Tubbs Realty.
Well, other people were probably going Davey, but those are like the older people, right?
That's a generational thing, right? but like Fred Willard's great, but they make sure to go through the whole subplot of him and the affair that he's having with his secretary / other dude's wife, and which interesting, compelling stuff at the same time, but it's like, it's characters that none of them have anything to do with the main plot going on. So like, if this were being made into a film, you would take that stuff and integrate it into other characters, right?
I'm watching this and I'm like, wait a minute, this whole thing happened and these people are leaving. Why do I care? They fucking left. Nothing matters.
Yeah. Nope. Didn't matter at all to the movie.
And then
also
that's the other thing. They took out so much from the book, like so many, like they shed down like so many details, but still the movie's 3 hours. And I'm like, I think you could have added more stuff instead of like glacial pacing on with the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Glacial pacing. I can't say words anymore.
Also, Jeffrey Lewis. Love Jeffrey Lewis. Always love Jeffrey Lewis. He was great in this, including when he goes full vampire and like hams it up and way overacts that scene where he's sitting in the rocking chair. And then when he stands up and I adore him. So everything he was in, every scene he was in was great.
Can I tell you what I felt like watching this movie? By the way,
what's that?
I kept having this feeling of like, didn't I watch this movie before and it was called Phantasm? Like, that's how I felt most of the movie, except like I like Phantasm and can watch that repeatedly, where this I probably couldn't, because I think it's like the older guy and the younger kid, and there was just something about it.
I think there's that. There's the whole like, stuff is going on that nobody else is noticing except one person who, you know, is being labeled as this kind of weirdo outsider. And so, yeah, I can see those parallels for sure. There again, pacing though. Phantasm is paced really well.
Long
because it's only an hour and a half long. It's half the runtime of this. Yes, we do.
I love Phantasm,
but it's like, it's half the runtime of this. So they can compact more story and character development into shorter periods of time. This was like, we have an entire scene where we get the half the phone conversation of Baron Harkonnen talking to the FBI. Like, come on. We don't need that whole scene. We don't need all of that. You can get all of that delivered. And like, I contacted the FBI to get some backgrounds on these guys.
I mean, I guess, you know, like, and I just thought about it. Like, the only reason we need to know about this guy and his cheating wife and subsequently the shit that he does to her that we don't know about really, except if we read the book, is because he makes the other guys drive to pick up the thing. And that's the only reason he needs to be in the fucking story. That's it.
But there again, if you're adapting, like, adapt the novel, take that aspect of things and just redo it, change it, or take those, because it's, if you're playing the Stephen King at home drinking game, you're going to get drunk every time, but it's like main character's an author, shitty rednecks, all that kind of stuff. He falls into the sort of shitty redneck in Maine, beats his wife. Because we get literally that one scene, he closes the door, you hear the slap, and then we don't see them again until they're leaving town and she has a bruise on her face. So there's no repercussions for what he did whatsoever. There's no repercussions for what happened with Fred Willard. And he just leaves town. And it's like you said, what's the point? Why are they even there? That would get adapted out of the story and take the elements of what that was trying to be and rework it. But we didn't do that here. Instead, it was 3 hours long. So, yeah.
That sounds interesting. But before we start going at our own glacial pace, I like that phrase now. You know what it's time for?
The 13!
The 13 is a specially cultivated list of tropes or our favorite things from horror movies. This may change or be adjusted as time goes on and in real time because this is real life and not a small boy scratching at the second floor window.
Are you sure?
He's floating.
Let me in. Let me in.
That sounds like The Fly now. But not the good one, the other one. No offense, people who made the original Fly. I've never seen it. I just know what it sounds
like. The original is good. It's different.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I will say that. The Jeff Goldblum Fly gave me nightmares forever and is one of the biggest reasons why I don't like body horror, because I wasn't expecting a lot of that. Uh-huh. And fuck you, David Cronenberg.
I love you, David Cronenberg.
Like, who was going to expect that he was going to take his fingernail off? I mean, come on. Really?
Well, have you ever seen flies with fingernails? Jesus,
man. Exactly.
And surprise vomit always gets me. That's all I'm
How
saying.
Do you digest your food or pre-gest?
Much the same. Yes, much the same. Number one, kitty cat.
Nah.
Vampires are kind of like cats, if you think about it. Right? They have sharp teeth. They suck blood.
Except that they really can't enter your house unless you invite them in, and cats just go wherever the fuck they want.
So. No, it's the opposite. Cats don't come in when you invite them in. They come in when you don't.
Well, I feel like that changed during parts of the movie as well, because then they just started doing whatever the fuck they wanted. But no kitty cat, so losing points. Number two, Volkswagen.
No. Yep.
Yeah? Wait, did I miss it?
There was Volkswagen, I think, somewhere parked, like a van in the street somewhere. Was it a different movie? I've watched a lot of movies.
I completely forgot.
There was a Jeep, and that's a big thing in Stephen King adaptations I've found, is a lot of people driving Jeeps in Maine.
I'll give you that one.
Wasn't as cool as the Jeep Scrambler in Dr. Sleep, though. I still want one of those.
Scrambler. That's how I like my eggs. I'm just joking. It's not how I like my eggs. It's just funny. So there might have been a Volkswagen. Well, somebody.
You'll just have to rewatch all 3 hours.
No, somebody else just write in, please. Oh, God. Nope. Number three, scary location, time of the year, summer camp, beach, abandoned mental hospital, holiday, full moon, etc., etc.
Stephen King, small town.
Stephen King, small town, Maine.
Creepy death house.
So it was. It's definitely in Maine because they mentioned Bangor a couple of times, and that Boston's not that far away. But what was with the Colorado license plate on the Jeep?
Yeah.
Did they film it in Colorado? Because I noticed that right away. I'm like, oh, Colorado. We're not in Maine. And then I start hearing him talk about the Northeast and New England, and I'm like, oh, we're in Maine. Okay.
He was returning there, so he may have been in Colorado. Who knows?
All right.
Yeah. Maybe it was a rental car that just had a Corrado plate.
A carotid artery.
Oh, God. I can't talk anymore.
Also, at the beginning of the movie, I get confused because I would thought, wait, were we watching Needful Things or something? Because I completely forget there was also like a shop in this with old timey things. Like, wait.
It was what? Very Needful Things.
Again, Stephen King at home drinking game. Don't play it. You lose every time.
And the caretaker was very much like the guy from Needful Things, the owner of the business.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Can I say real quick about James Mason as Straker? I loved him. James Mason was so good.
Love James
Mason. I adored him in this. He really made up for David Soule, who, again, I have nothing against David Soule. You know, like, I just don't think he was that good in this.
Uh-huh. Feel like you have something against David Soule now.
But James Mason was really good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Number four, meta horror, fourth wall breaks, mentioning the title.
Well, mentioning the title.
literally Salem's Lot.
Said that a few times. Oh. I did like that when they talk about getting like a crucifix or a rosary, and it's like, but you're not Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, vampires are only Catholic. You become Catholic. You convert to Catholicism when you become a vampire. I don't know. Nope. I kind of liked that. That's a little meta.
Catholic.
Yeah. Which that part of the lore for vampires changed over the time, that it had to be, you had to be a person of conviction and believed in it for it to work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
Yes. Because the vampire knows when you mean it.
That's a rule in vampire-related media, is that you have to lay down your vampire rules for that particular story being told.
I will say this isn't technically fourth wall breaks, but I just really like this because it has to do with kind of the title. But the theatrical version was released in Spain with the title Phantasma 2, a supposed sequel to Phantasm 1979, even though the two movies have nothing in common, but I tell you, they're very similar in my mind. So
I don't know.
I just thought that was cute because, like,
I think you mean Phantasma Dos.
Phantasma Dos. Yes, please correct my Spanish, Belgian boy.
Si. De nada.
Then what did they call Phantasm 2 when it came out?
Phantasm.
Well, it's like the Italians with their zombie movies, you know.
It's Phantasm.
Zombie 2, Zombie 3, they're all different freaking movie.
I translated it to English. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Look, it's like my name. Like, you can say it with an accent, but you don't have to. Because it could be either way. But if the accent is there, then you have to say it. You hear what I'm saying? Number five. Archetype characters. Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th. Randy from Scream. Dick Halloran from The Shining. Norman Bates from Psycho. Kinsa from Jason X. Creepy clowns. Creepy kids. Disappearing Shirley's. Creepy motherfucking kids.
What happened there on Psycho? You went Southern.
Psycho.
For one word. You're like flying through everything and it's like Psycho. Wait, what? Hold on.
I don't
That's not know. Going unmentioned.
Kinsa.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't know.
We had Weasel, the old town drunk.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yes.
Played by Alicia Cook Jr., who is funny because I'm watching this and the episode of Magnum PI that I just watched for Those Were the Days, Alicia Cook Jr. was in that playing a character named Wilmer in a flashback. They were doing like a dream sequence Magnum was having and it was like an old noir. And Alicia Cook was playing a character named Wilmer, but it was a nod to the Maltese Falcon where he played a punk named Wilmer in that movie who killed someone, who killed the main character's partner. And in this, he was playing an older version of Wilmer who had killed the fat man. And so I just saw him in something. I was like, wait a second. I know that face. And I like him. He's great. He was awesome as the drunk.
Yes.
Weasel.
Definitely like a kind of like a Crazy Ralph type character. And we had creepy kids. Creepy kids.
I'm sorry, but the shot of Weasel real quick in the room where he's just like, he keeps pulling the paper out of the typewriter and trying to wind it back in, but it's all at an angle. And he's like reading it at the same time. Like, that's great. Cause you, if you're drunk enough, you think you're doing the thing right and you are completely doing it wrong. And I just love that. Creepy kids. All the
those kids in the fucking fuckity fuck. What do you call that? In the
pageant?
At the window. Yeah. So, and I forgot to mention this when I was talking, about what I had seen, but I just rewatched Buffy the Vampire Slayer. By the way, forgot so many people that were in that movie, but David Arquette plays Luke Perry's best friend in that movie, and he gets bit by a vampire by Paul Rubens, and who plays a vampire, and he shows up at his window floating and scratching at the window. It's the same exact thing, and it was so funny. But he's just like, no man, go home. And he's like, oh man, come on, let me in. And he's like, you're floating. Like, no. I forgot. I used to love that movie. I had a poster of Buffy above my bed. Yeah, that's right.
If you're going by that movie, I have a Slayer's mark.
Faye is the Slayer now.
Probably explains a lot.
Any other archetype characters in this movie?
I mean, the constable, the cop who's mostly kind of useless, but at least in this, he wasn't a complete asshole.
Well, he did try. He wasn't dumb. He actually, you know, he got background information. He actually went to the dude and was like, hey, where's your black suit? Like, at least he tried, okay?
Yeah, you know, he tried. He wasn't, like I said, he wasn't completely useless. We didn't have the religious nut that you usually get in a Stephen King.
True. Which you would expect with a vampire thing. You would have, like, religion.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right.
Yeah. Like, that's the one on the Stephen King bingo that we didn't get to check off was religious zealot.
Was there one in the book at all, or no?
I do not remember.
I can't remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah. It's curious. We did have the town of people that were just like
oblivious.
Yeah, there's a lot of yeah, that too. And there were a lot of crappy people in that town. Although technically the jerk who beat the hell out of his wife and works in the book left town before getting his confidence.
Guess he's an archetype as well, the drunk.
The drunk, the cheating wife. The realtor who wears the great suits. A realtor? Was he a realtor?
Yes.
Did I just assume that?
No, he was a realtor. Craig Crockett and Tubbs Realty.
He had the great, he just had great suits.
I mean, they're like, not quite like Mayor pink. And Jaws level suits or anything like that. Like, we're
there
were
no anchors or little fangs or nothing, you know? Now I want a blazer with like all sharks on it.
I'm sure it's out there.
It's gonna be. Number 6. Pointless boobies, weird wings, moonies, fannies.
No.
Nope.
Made for
time. We got weird fangs.
Good old standards and practices will put a stop to any of that.
We had egregious you know, Nosferatu type vampire. Stop looking at me.
We had man nipples.
Did we?
Yeah.
I miss man nipples.
When they're in the bed cheating. She's completely wearing the same thing as she was before. Just, you know, that's how you cheat. But he lost his clothes.
God, what a stupid, stupid thing. Mm-hmm. They seem so happy, too. Like, when he was sitting there watching TV and she comes in And she's just like, she's lovely and happy, and she kisses him hello, and they talk. And I'm like, wow, what a happy couple. I wasn't expecting that ending.
Like, especially when she goes, hey, don't drink too much, because we're going to bang. And he's like, get me another beer.
Yeah. Remind me not to get married. Number 7. Telling, retelling the legend and or establishing the movie's rules. Breaking Randy's rules.
Talking about that house over and over again.
They did. And okay, so there, here's my biggest problem with, and I'm sure that most of it is probably a budget and an amount of time that they had to do this in. But the scene with Ben and, is it Jake? Whoever the old band teacher was. And they're Jason. And they're sitting, they're eating, and Ben is talking about when he went into the house as a kid on a dare. And he saw the you know, he saw things and all that kind of stuff. That's where I was like, I just want more out of this character than what I'm getting. It felt very flat and very like I'm reading out of a book, like a textbook, as opposed to a real emotional scene. Like, I just wanted more there where he was really recalling what happened and it really affected him. And it, you know, it's something that he's worked into his writing or something. Like, it just, it was missing something there. It just felt very flat. Because otherwise, it makes for a really interesting scene, right? To talk about that and be like, yeah, as a kid, I went into that house where my aunt worked, or my mom, or whatever it was. I can't remember what relation it was. I think it was his aunt. But I went in there and I saw things and it messed with me. And I saw, you know, like all that is pretty cool. But that just felt like, nope, here's my lines. I'm reciting them. Okay. Cut, print, let's go on. And I wanted more. So
they can't all be Alan Wake.
No, but they should be. Damn it.
There was a, I think I yelled, don't go in there to people when they were going in the house and stuff. And like when, Bonnie Bedelia, I can't say people's names. Bedelia. Apparently.
Yeah.
I said Debelia. By the way, I just want to point that out.
Mrs. Bedelia. John McClane.
Yes. Mrs. John McClane. Bonnie McClane. That was, I don't know. That was all dumb. Some of that was just dumb. Going back in the house and I don't know. Whatever. I don't think it really matters.
I like the look of the house, the facade they built. For the look of that house is really cool.
Give me Psycho vibes.
Did a little bit, yeah.
Creepity old house. Yeah, I liked it. That's probably another thing that helped give it that phantasm-y vibe. Houses. The house. Number 8. Dance sequence, montage sequence, homage sequence, flashbacks.
Not really, montage, no.
So much.
No.
Just the time jump.
Yes.
The first 5 minutes, and then it jumps back multiple months or weeks or whatever.
There
it
is
was.
That.
2 years ago.
2 years.
That's an interesting storytelling device. It's like, here, we're going to let you know who survived, basically.
Yeah.
But you won't really know that until later, but you kind of know it.
They found us. One of them found us.
They found us. And then it's like, how the fuck? What the fuck kind of vampires are these?
Yeah, made holy water glow.
Heat seeking.
For whatever reason. I mean, to have your main vampire be basically Nosferatu, including even having the fangs right up in the front, front two teeth that way, but all the subsequent vampires have the same glowy eyes, but their skin doesn't change. And maybe that's just because he's super old, but like the fangs are different was a choice to be made for sure. Cause that is one thing I remember from the book is that Barlow is much more like Dracula than he is Nosferatu.
Yeah.
He's like talks and all that. He's not just a hissing monster.
Yeah, but if he talked in this, it would be an hour longer. Do you want that? Did you want that?
I mean, you bring up a very good point. Like,
I don't know. It depends what he would say. I don't know.
Oh, well, sometime soon I'll watch the sequel and we'll see what happens in that.
Oh, the return to Salem's Lot?
Yes. It's not as long. So,
no.
There's that.
But Travis makes a good point. That's an homage by making it, making the vampire look like that.
Yeah.
Because we don't like to say rip off. We like to say homage because it's French, or homage if you like to pronounce H's. Number 9. Scary score, spooky soundtrack. Is this the kind of, did this have music? Honestly,
yes. Is that great music?
I don't remember anything.
Come on now. That intro was so bombastic, epic.
No, you know what? Now I remember it. That's right. I was like, you know what? This is jazzy.
Yeah, the dude making that soundtrack thingy, he was like, I'm going to make the best shit ever because this movie's going to be the best movie ever. But
yeah, he went for it.
Yeah. The
music, I'm not going to say it's memorable, but it fit really well. Like, bombastic is a great word for it. It was definitely that.
I feel like you shouldn't say it was memorable on a show where two of your co-hosts said they didn't remember it. That would be irony.
That means nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey!
Our opinions matter.
Your opinions matter. No. I'm not saying they don't. But if I say something is memorable, it has nothing to do with whether or not you remembered it.
I know, but it's not about...
Yeah, but when I said bombastic, you remembered.
Yes, I did.
So
I remembered because I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't sing the song for you, but I remember it.
Well, there were no lyrics, so it's fine.
Yeah. You think that stops me? If there are horns, I will toot horns out of my mouth. Toot. Those were horns.
Oh, this was, by the way, the music was composer Harry Suckman. and it was his last score. He passed away 5 years later.
Aww.
So this was the last.
He knew he couldn't top it.
Right. He's like, I'm going out on top, man. That's the best I'm ever going to do.
Oh, well, congratulations to you, sir.
Go on, number say 10. His name. Say it.
What?
Say his name.
Say you know whose name? To. Who?
The composer.
What was his name?
I already told you. See?
I don't remember things. I don't remember names. That's why I never ask people for names.
It was Suckman.
Like, if I couldn't see your last name right now, Travis, I would not remember your last name.
Nobody remembers my last name.
Travis Suckman.
I remember your last name. But we've known each other forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know Faye's last name. I don't want to know. Just in case.
It's Faye Suckwoman.
Suckwoman.
Oh my.
Great. This is reminding me too much of that Colbert bit where they had the super pack.
Did somebody unzip?
Oh, yeah.
This is that kind of a show, okay? Put it away. Number 10. That scared the shit out of me. Jump scares, one last scare, another creepy shit. The child floating outside the window scraping.
That made me giggle, not scary.
I mean, like, look, obviously it didn't scare me now, but, like, I can imagine being a kid and that being something that made me not want to get up again. to go to the bathroom or look out the window and, you know, dream.
There was one jump scare that while it didn't like scare me, it was, there was such a loud musical sting when it happened. It was in the house and it was the head vampire like appearing. They punched the sound so hard at that point, and I like knew it was coming. It was one of those jump scares you see signposted, but I had looked away from the screen and was petting Bella, and all of a sudden that musical sting hits and I was like, oh Jesus. Okay. I made the mistake of looking away. It startled me for sure. Because you hear, all I heard was this loud sound, and I look up and it's just that face taking up the entirety of my TV.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have turned away from
it. I think it's the first time you see it too.
Yeah.
So
never turn your back on a vampire. You should know better by now.
I should know, but I didn't.
Now you're one of them.
Oh, quick question. So apparently if you look into their eyes, they can hypnotize you, right? Did we all sort of get that from the movie?
Yeah.
So what hypnotized Jeffrey Lewis to jump down into the grave with the coffin because it was closed and there were no eyes for him to see?
Wasn't that a dream?
No, that was...
Okay.
No, that was...
I got
that
confused
was real.
In certain parts.
It like was a strange scene because it just kind of went on forever.
Yeah.
It was him like... staring down into there and then walking away and coming back and the wind blowing. And I was just very confused by that. Like why any of that happened other than, you know, it was written to.
Yeah. I don't know.
The only thing I could think of, even though I think I'm wrong, is that he had already been bitten once and then they have control over you. But I don't
know that
properly.
That was before he was bitten for the first time. He got bit for the first time when he opens the coffin and the kid sits up.
And gently nibbles on his neck.
Nibble, nibble, nibble.
So the floating kid at the window stuff was all shot in reverse, which I thought was kind of neat. Because it does give it a strange quality to it that you don't like. I didn't notice it at first. And I noticed at the end of the scene, I'm like, oh, that's in reverse. The whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool. It's actually like, I wonder if that was a Toby Hooper idea.
Probably.
Because it seems like it would have been.
The only thing that I was thinking, like, once again, like I said, it didn't really scare me when I watched it, but I could see how it would scare you as a kid and whatnot. But, like, the one thing I was thinking of is, does anybody remember that scene of The Simpsons where Smithers is like, do you ever have that dream where they fly in the window while you're in bed? And it's him in bed and Mr. Burns flies in.
Mm, no. Yeah.
That's like a great, I love that scene. And he's just so happy. That's what I was thinking when I watched that. You're all welcome.
Thanks.
Go watch The Simpsons. Not this movie. Well, you can watch this movie too if you want, but watch The Simpsons first and then whatever. Do whatever you want.
I mean, the window, the vampire at the window has always been a trope for a long time.
Is this what started the trope, or can we trace it back further?
I don't know. The one I know it from most is Lost Boys.
When were windows invented?
Shut up. Just shut up.
Which was after them, obviously.
I like that, because I like to know where tropes start, where they come from, and the things that influence people, and...
Didn't a couple of the Boris Karloff vampire movies have that too? I'm trying to remember.
It might have. I mean, it's been vampire lore for a long time that they have to be invited in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just another version of they have to be invited in, which I did like that Jason gets rid of Jeffrey Lewis's vampire character with the cross by telling him I rescind my invite or whatever. You're not allowed here anymore. And pushes him out, you know, forces him out the window. I liked that. Like, I take back my invitation. You're not allowed.
Yeah. If you watch True Blood, they do that, and it's really funny. Because the vampire has to leave. And it's like... it's very cool. Just remember that trick. I revoke. Number 11. Someone does stupid shit. Or name your favorite trope.
I have one. Okay. So if you're a boss and you're, well, you're not cheating, but you're the wife is cheating with you. And you're like smart and you're like sending the husband away on a mission. And let's say you know he's going to be away for like 4 hours. Don't wait 4 hours before you go over to bang his wife. Because the way this movie was shot, the dudes that went in his place, they went, picked up the box, came back to the house. And that's when that's the moment he arrives to do the thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so even if the husband went and he would have been back. What are you doing?
Exactly. It was stupid. There was no point in him waiting around to find out because he didn't even show up until after he would have been there. So he would have ended up going home and catching them.
Well, you know, nobody said that that's why Crockett needed Tubbs, right? To give him that type of information.
Speaking of transporting
a box. I ain't letting that one go.
If you're transporting a box and it's moving on its own and getting colder and colder, don't open it.
Yeah. If somebody tells you not to open a box, don't fucking open the box. Like, this isn't difficult, right? Like, let alone privacy laws and whatnot. Like, I'm not opening your box. I don't give a shit.
That guy wasn't exactly smart, though, right? He did that, and then he disappeared from the movie for a half an hour, only to reappear inside Ben's room to beat the hell out of him for taking his girl. Aww. So. Does everybody in this town have super strength? Because they were moving these objects around like they were nothing.
Yeah.
He pulled that coffin out of the one room into the other room. Like, I was like, oh, it's a nice balsa wood coffin, I see. Because it weighed nothing. Like, he was just dragging it along the ground. That shouldn't happen.
Moving that big box by hand.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something else. I mean...
So it's
yeah, the town was evil and it gave everyone super strength.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Perfect.
Was anyone else just super pissed off they killed the dog?
Yes.
That took points away from the movie as well.
I was like, you're going to kill the dog, aren't you? No, don't kill it. They killed the dog. And then we had to see the dead dog twice. I don't need to see the dead dog.
And they had to show the guy being super sad about it. Like, he had to go looking for it.
Yeah, he spent all night looking for his dog, Faithful. His dog was named Faithful. Like, come on. What are you doing here? That dog was 2 days away from retirement, too, wasn't it?
Exactly. Oh,
name a dog Faithful.
Didn't deserve that. It had the trope of everyone dies, but you know, the two people who make it out alive, just like the whole fucking town is dead, basically. Or
they burned it all down.
Exactly.
Also, that one woman was in at the end. They were all in the house. They know the woman is in the house. They just get out. They don't even try to find her.
Oh, yeah.
It's burning. It's fine. She's gone.
I'm going to miss her.
They open the thing, so that's stupid. Right? Did they open it?
No. No.
No.
Okay.
Why did I just think that they did, but they didn't? That's right.
No, you put a crowbar to it, then they heard walking around upstairs from someone that wasn't the vampire and wasn't the vampire's assistant. So I don't know who they were hearing close the door and walk around, but they did, so they left.
I now want the job of vampire's assistant, by the way. I wonder what it pays. Like, what kind of calls do you have to answer?
I mean, he had a cool car and
Ask Renfield. You've
seen Renfield, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it pays. It's not as glamorous as you might think.
Aww.
We've also seen Vampire in Brooklyn.
That has a great ending.
and his eye. He loses everything.
Yeah, but what happened at the end? That was a great ending. That's all I'm saying. See? Go watch Vampire in Brooklyn. It's better than you think. Fusili. Number 12. Final girl. Used in a positive way? No, there's no final girl. I don't know why I'm even bothering going further than just saying final girl and saying no. The only girl that was left at the end, they left to die, and then she's, you know, becomes a vampire and chases them down.
Oh, I forgot to mention that trope. The trope of the beautiful monster. The one person who doesn't look like the monster.
Exactly.
At all. And then suddenly has the fangs for whatever reason. But up until that point, just looks like Bonnie Bedelia. Because we got to have that, right? She can't, she can't be the grotesque monster like every other person.
Exactly. They always have to make the women look beautiful, no matter what they are. The women zombies, they're always a little more put together than the male zombies.
Well, yeah, that was sells.
But that was a thing, and I don't know if we talked about it enough in like 30 Days of Night, how they didn't do that, right? Those vampires just look...
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's
those vampires look rough. Like, those vampires have been beat with a shovel, and it's fine. It's a good look. I appreciate that. Like, either you got to go one or the other. The vampires either have to be Anne Rice vampires, and then it makes sense. But if you're going to have your vampires have a weird stylized look like they did in this movie, then they all have to do that. Don't give me the trope of the one beautiful vampire. If it's Anne Rice vampires and they all look like Brad Pitt and Antonio Banderas and whatnot, fine. That's that. Whatever, you've established that. That's your style of vampire. But don't give me Nosferatu and the vampirelings with their glowy eyes and their big, nasty teeth. But then we get one that doesn't have that.
If you look at like things like Buffy, like the...
They transform.
What was the one that was... They transform back and forth. But then also like the old vampire that was like living in the hellhole or whatever it was called. He was like also bald and very white and stuff.
But that's established... That's established throughout the thing that they can transform. There was nothing that gave us in this.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not saying that, but the old vampire. It's very weird. It's a very weird movie. I still don't know how I feel about it. I'll probably watch it again someday. Number 13, the Savini scale of gore. It's not the quantity of gore, it's the quality of gore. Special effects and monsters. So how many Nosferatus out of 10?
Glowing holy water.
In context, given that it is made for television and the budget they would have had for that, I'm going to give this a 6.5. I think it was good, not great. Parts of it looked better than others, but it definitely had the made-for-TV budget look.
I was going to give it a 5. For mainly the same reasons.
Look, the vampire himself looks great. Like, that look, that face, that's just memorable. I love what they did with the eyes. Those look good. And
those contacts were cool. They're like black light contacts. I want some of those.
Yeah. Also, the fog thingy with the whole reverse shot, that looks, still looks good. And that's about all I remember about any effects, actually, because there's no real gore, no real.
No.
I'm going to give it a 7.
So what do we got? A 6, a 5, and a
7.
We got a 5, a 7, and a 6.5.
6.5. I'm going to give it a 5. I don't care. I don't know. I like the main vampire. Whatever. It was fine. There was nothing bad. There's nothing bad. I feel like I just said the equivalent of it's a movie for special effects.
I'm pretty sure this is one where there was bite marks, no bite marks, bite marks, no bite marks in the same scene.
Continuity errors.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll wrap up the 13 for this episode. So here's a little trivia that I didn't get to say during the show, but I will read this trivia to you because I found it interesting and I have a gripe. Or a grape. Director George A. Romero was originally approached to direct a feature film version, but after the announcements of John Badham's, I don't know how to pronounce that last name, Dracula in 1979 and Werner Herzog's Nosferatu, the Vampire in 1979, Warner Brothers decided to turn Salem's Lot into a TV miniseries and Romero dropped out, feeling he wouldn't be able to make the film the way he wanted. This makes me, like, really mad that that's why they decided to do the miniseries. I feel like it could have been the year of the fucking vampire. That would have been so awesome. Like, three friggin'... I put four fingers up, but three vampire movies.
But you have to think about it in the context of the late 70s in film, which is people aren't just going to every movie that comes out. And if you have a Dracula and Nosferatu the Vampire and Salem's Lot, you either have to rename it something that coincides with or goes really shows off that it's vampire related. You have to push the marketing super hard. And even then people are going to be like, well, but I know that one's about Dracula. I'm going to go see that instead. So I kind of get where Warner Brothers was coming from on this. I'm with you. And I would have loved to have seen it come out as a feature film and let Romero do it. This is going to be a whole lot better, and there's more money going to go to it and more work, and it's not going to be 3 hours long. but
even if it was 3 hours long, it would have been a good 3 hours.
It would have been paced a lot better, but I get what Warner Brothers thought was, which is, okay, that's got Dracula naming right in it. And this is not Stephen King. Stephen King wasn't Stephen King yet. Like, there had been Carrie. That was the big thing that people knew. And they knew that he had a couple of books out. That's all. So you didn't have that name to trade on. Like, if this was 1989, different story. They make it as a feature film because by that point, you've got the name Stephen King means something. So
yeah,
I'm with you. I agree with the gripe. I just understand the business side of that, which is
oversaturation.
Yeah. It hurts me to say that. It just hurts me to say, like, I agree with the business part of that, but I
do. Yeah, but it also wasn't just because, like, it were two vampire movies, but also because just the size of Stephen King's novel itself, like, the how much that they had to deal with, and then even to pare it down to do a 3-hour miniseries was just a lot to squeeze in. And they had, like, I think it was 2 or 3 times beforehand they had people writing the screenplay and trying to make something worth doing, and they just, a lot of them couldn't do it. So this is what we ended up with.
I mean, look, we've seen how hard it is to adapt King and how many bad adaptations there can be of Stephen King or just sort of like meh adaptations of King because he's got long novels and they're dense. And it took a long time for people to fully kind of wrap their heads around his storytelling and be able to adapt that well.
Yeah. It is super interesting, though. And I wish I lived in a world where I could see that happen. If we did a body count, it would be the whole town. So whatever. Whole town.
-2.
Right in the body count. -2. Yeah. And now we'll play What the Hell Was That? It's where we play a clip from our next movie provided by our clip curator, Dreadly. But let's be honest. Are you really going to guess this? I think you all know what movie.
I don't think anyone is going to guess this.
If you actually look at what the date is going to be when this movie, when this episode is going to be released, you're going to figure out what movie it's going to be. And if you've been following the show, you know how we like to do the order of operations and whatnot. So you're going to figure it out. So you don't really have to guess it, but we're still going to give you a clip because that's what we do. Play the clip, Dreadly.
I'll take that now.
Is this your rubber?
If you can't guess that movie. I don't know what to say. I don't know. Ask your friends. But anyway, you should still follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky at Gore Podcast. We didn't get any emails, but if you'd like to email the show, you can email us at gorepodcast13@gmail.com. We have a website, so check us out at gorepodcast.com, created by the lovely Bombi. Bombi. And we have a Patreon, so if you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/gore13. We have a bunch of tiers for you to join, starting at $2 a month. It's a wonderful place to be. You get to be part of the private Discord and hang out with us, which, I mean, maybe that's a plus for you. Maybe it's a minus. But you'll never know unless you try. And if you'd like to support us in some non-monetary ways, leave a 5-star review. I don't give a crap. Anywhere. Like Apple, Spotify, your mom's porch or something. I don't know. Wherever you leave reviews, tell people. Walk around and shout it in the street. Become the town crier. Because we love you. Harry, Harry! Oh, what's my favorite Ralph line? I don't remember. Oh! It tastes like burning! I don't remember what he was eating, though. It was something not right to eat.
Become the crazy Ralph.
But until the next episode, Travis, where can people find you?
Pretty much any social network as TV's Travis, or just go to tvstravis.com.
What's your YouTube?
At TV's Travis.
Oh, we should follow you there. Because
you should.
Yeah.
Please. Please do.
And Faye, where can people find you?
On Twitter, at Chibi Phelan.
And Blue Sky. Someday you'll go on there. Someday.
I'm there. I just don't do anything.
Well, you do about the same amount, right? Hey, go like my tweet. I said nice stuff the other day. And finally, Dreadly, tell people how they can travel to the bowels of hell to find you.
Just head on over to thedreadzone.com for linkages to all stuffs. And where can people find you, Wicked Kitten?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Twitch, Blue Sky, and other places, I think. At WickedKitten13. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope we made it a little harder to fall asleep tonight.
Pernicious anemia.